I'm Heather.
And I'm Rochelle.
And we're the hosts of Nature vs. Narcissism,
a true crime podcast mixed with some dark humor.
Sometimes we have alcohol.
Sometimes we have guests.
Sacramento, California.
Canton, Michigan.
Green River,
Honolulu,
Hawaii.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Niagara, North Dakota.
Gloucester, United Kingdom.
Dakota County, Wyoming.
Epazoyucan, Hidalgo, Mexico.
Flint, Michigan.
Boston, Massachusetts.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Woodruff, South Carolina.
Hodmonton, Yorkshire.
Hudson Valley, New York.
In Season 2, we will examine notorious killers in cities across the globe from A to Z.
We'll delve into their criminal history as well as their upbringing to try to determine why these killers commit these violent acts.
Was it nature?
Was it nurture?
Or was it plain old narcissism?
Find us on your favorite podcast streaming service.
Or visit murder.ly.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. A case study states, statistics have shown that nearly half of all murder victims actually knew their murderer. In fact, 20% of murders involve family members. So even though we hear the horror stories of serial killers or random unsolved murders, your chances are much higher of being killed by someone you know and maybe someone you love. This is the case of Alyssa Bustamante and the tragic murder of Elizabeth Olton. In 2009, Elizabeth Olton was a kind soul and a girly girl. She had brown hair, big sparkly brown eyes. Her favorite color was pink, she adored cats, and she was shy. Elizabeth would wear cute, fancy dresses just to play in the snow or the mud. She was only 9 years old when she went missing in her small town of St. Martins, Missouri. Elizabeth went to her friend Emma's house, the six-year-old half-sister of Alyssa Bustamante. She only lived 4 hours away from Alyssa. If you were to leave Elizabeth's house, there was a highway that led to the six-year-old's home. Elizabeth would normally take that path while walking there. It was super unusual that she would take the crosscut through the woods, which many say she would have never done. The woods coiled around the neighbor's yards. Elizabeth never would have taken this path. When she failed to arrive home on October 21st, 2009, everyone started to panic. Elizabeth was only missing for 45 minutes before the search was on. It was around 7 p.m. when hundreds of people in the community, plus firefighters, FBI, police, canines, helicopters, and highway patrol, started to comb through the bleak, frigid, rainy woods. It wasn't easy. These woods were filled with hills and mounds of brush. It was very hard to see. This hunt for Elizabeth turned out to be fruitless. Initially, everyone suspected that Elizabeth was probably taken by a man who nobody knew as she was trekking home. This couldn't have been someone in their little town where things like this don't happen, and everyone knew each other. Alyssa Bustamante was 15 years old at the time of Elizabeth's disappearance. She was called a disturbed teenager with a terrible past. The kids said that she was the stereotypical goth. She wore black eyeliner, had light brown bangs that dangled over her light blue eyes, and in her Facebook pictures, she was always making the pouty face. This was pretty typical for teenagers to do. She liked to post pictures on MySpace, Twitter, and Facebook with red lipstick smeared on her lips and face. She would make faces and clench her teeth together in photos. To me, that's pretty typical of what we used to call emo and scene kids on social media. Outside of that, people said she would harass others. What gets creepy as far as her social media was her YouTube page. Her account name was Okami Kaj, which means wolf shadow in Japanese. Her hobbies that she listed included killing people and cutting. Her YouTube video posts were basically of her and her brothers horsing around, yet two videos stood out among the rest. One was captioned, quote, "Idiots getting electrocuted by electric fence." In one of Alyssa's videos, she and her two twin brothers, who are younger than her, only 9 years old at the time, stood in front of an electric fence. Alyssa grins and takes hold of the fence as she makes a grimacing, twisting face, clearly in pain. Afterwards, she talks her brothers into grabbing the fence as well. Words pop up onto the screen that read, "This is where it gets good. This is where we see my brothers get hurt." The twin brothers latch onto the fence, then fall on the ground, laughing and shaking. Reportedly, another video was of Alyssa on the school bus threatening to shoot a classmate. On Alyssa's Twitter, she posted that she was, quote, "somewhere I don't want to be." When she posted the picture of herself with lipstick smeared on her face, she made the handgun gesture to her head, and you can see a lot of places on her inner wrist where she had been cutting herself. One picture found of Alyssa was of her holding a knife to another girl's throat. Another Twitter post said, quote, "Bad decisions make great stories." Alyssa had been diagnosed with severe depression and was getting treatment for it because she had attempted suicide in 2007. She was put into the hospital for the attempt. Alyssa seemed to be sadistic and troubled. Some think Alyssa didn't have a huge chance to make something of herself because of the circumstances that she was born into. Her mom, Michelle, was a teenager when she gave birth to Alyssa. She was involved in criminal activity, such as drug possession and getting a DUI. Michelle abused drugs and alcohol. Alyssa's dad, Caesar, wasn't around because he was locked up, doing 10 years for assault. In 2002, Alyssa's grandparents were able to get legal custody of Alyssa and her younger siblings due to Michelle's struggle with her addiction. It was in 2007 when Alyssa was put in the hospital for her suicide attempt, and friends of hers said it was at that time when she started to change. People said that she was violent and seemed mad at the world, on top of her being depressed. She was on medication for her depression, but she was still cutting herself as a coping mechanism when she was emotionally distressed. Her best friend said that Alyssa once said, quote, "I just wonder what it would be like just to kill someone. See the life just drain out of someone. I wonder what it would feel like, that type of power, to take that away from someone." End quote. Alyssa didn't show up for school the day after Elizabeth disappeared, which was odd. This was the first time ever that Alyssa didn't show up to school without a doctor's excuse the next day. A few weeks before Elizabeth disappeared, Alyssa made a tweet that said, "This is all I want in life, a reason for all of this pain." When Elizabeth left the 6-year-old Emma's house a little after 6 that evening, Evidence showed that Alyssa used Emma to lure Elizabeth out of the house, saying that she had a surprise for her. Alyssa had stored a knife in a backpack. She persuaded little Elizabeth, who was terrified of the dark and the woods, but she talked her into the woods by taking her hand and saying, "I've got something really neat to show you. It's just a little bit further up here." She trusted Alyssa. Alyssa was older and had always been friendly towards her. She never imagined that going into the woods with Alyssa would be the last thing that she ever did. When Elizabeth got to Alyssa, the 15-year-old started strangling the 9-year-old. She proceeded to slit Elizabeth's throat, beat her, slash her wrist, and stab her in the chest with a kitchen knife. 5 days before the murder, Alyssa had already dug 2 graves in the woods, and one of the graves is where she put Elizabeth's body. After she put her body in the grave, she started piling leaves and dirt on top. Alyssa returned home and decided to write in her diary, quote, "I just fucking killed someone. I strangled them and slit her throat and stabbed them. Now they're dead. I don't know how to feel at the moment. It was amazing. As soon as you get over the, oh my God, I can't do this feeling, it's pretty enjoyable. I'm kind of nervous and shaky though right now. Kay, I gotta go to church now, LOL." End quote. Alyssa hurried off to the church dance like nothing happened. Meanwhile, hundreds of people were exploring the woods, desperately seeking 9-year-old Elizabeth. A week before she took Elizabeth's young life, she wrote in her diary, quote, "If I don't talk about it, I bottle it up, and when I explode, someone's gonna die." An anonymous letter pointed to Alyssa, and the police started to investigate the teenager. The day she didn't show up to school, she was with her 16-year-old boyfriend, who was questioned 8 times by the Missouri State Highway Patrol and FBI over 7 days. Her boyfriend told authorities that Alyssa had mentioned her little sister's friend was missing and that the police had searched her house. The boyfriend went on to say that he found a black knife or a box cutter in Alyssa's backpack, a weapon that the prosecution said was much smaller than the knife used in the murder. Alyssa's boyfriend denied knowing about Elizabeth's death until being informed of it by the FBI, which caused him to become ill and later he threw up. The court filing, which sought to block the boyfriend from being called to testify at the trial, said the boyfriend later failed a polygraph test, but he was never charged with a crime. Alyssa broke down and finally told the sergeant, once she arrived at the site of the hole, that she began to strangle Elizabeth while she was facing her, that she strangled her multiple times and stabbed her in the chest about 6 or 7 times, and then she sliced her throat. After her confession, she took the sergeant to where Elizabeth's corpse was in the woods 2 days after the murder. This was after she misled the police quite a few times. These woods had been combed over more than once, even in that particular spot. The sergeant said, quote, "She knew exactly where it was, led us directly to it. It wasn't well covered. Once she pointed out the area and you looked a little bit closer, you could see that she was only a few inches, if that, under the ground, and you could see body parts that came up, covered with mud. It's a pretty horrifying homicide." Rumors started to spread like wildfire around the small town of St. Martin's. The Cole County Sheriff, Greg White, did not want to contaminate the jury pools, even though he was aware of how badly the community wanted to know everything that they knew. The community was only aware at the time that a teenage girl was the person of interest. What they did not know was that the police had found this teenager's diary. They found it hidden under a blanket, which would be key evidence that led her to being the prime suspect, along with Elizabeth's cell phone. Elizabeth's cell phone pinged her location in the woods, but the police never found her or the cell phone, which was in her pants all this time, and all their searches beforehand. After Alyssa was arrested, the small town was shocked that a teenager in their community would do something so vicious. What was her motive? Why had she dug not one, but two graves? As she told her best friend, she wanted to know what it felt like to kill. It seemed simple enough, like that was what it was on the surface. But if we take a look deeper inside, should more have been done to take care of Alyssa mentally? Nothing excuses murder. We all know that. Many think it is just sad and unfortunate that she didn't have her parents and she seemed to be psychologically unstable with no one in her life that made sure she was mentally in a better place. Neither of her parents were in her life, as we know, and she was spiraling out of control at her grandmother's. Maybe this could have been prevented if the right steps had been made. Other people do go through way worse situations and have the strength to fight. Other people don't process things the same way. Just like how she was self-mutilating on top of taking depression medications as a way to cope. Many people that deal with mental illness don't self-mutilate. Some think that cognitive behavioral therapy would be the most beneficial treatment for Alyssa to overcome her negative thoughts. Ultimately, it was Alyssa who made the decision to take her own pain out on an innocent 9-year-old, and she was found to be mentally stable at the time of the trial. It's suspected that the reason why she dug two graves is because they were probably for her twin brothers. Police came to this conclusion since she liked to torture her brothers and enjoyed seeing them in pain. They believed the only reason she didn't kill them first is because she had an opportunity right at her fingertips to easily murder someone else in that moment. Now, Alyssa has never said that herself. This is all police speculation. She may never even say why she dug two graves. None of us know whether she planned to strike again, or if she even had a plan at all. Alyssa's friend Jennifer, who was the one that recalled Alyssa telling her she thought about what killing someone would be like, said, quote, "I was at her party, and she kind of just took me off to the side randomly, and she's like, you know, I wonder what it would be like to kill somebody. Because I guess she was mad at one of her friends there, but it just seemed kind of strange. But you wouldn't logically think that one of your friends would kill someone." End quote. In 9-year-old Elizabeth's obituary, it states, "Elizabeth K. Olton, 9, of Jefferson City, was welcomed into the arms of the angels on Wednesday, October 21st, 2009. She was born December 15th, 1999, in Jefferson City, a daughter of Patricia Patty Carwile Priest and Dale Olton Sr. Elizabeth was currently a fourth grade student at Pioneer Trails Elementary School in Jefferson City. She was a lover of music, and some of her favorites included Hannah Montana and Taylor Swift. She loved horses, playing with her friends, and especially enjoyed baking cookies and doing puzzles with her mom. She also loved to play dress-up with her animals. Elizabeth's funeral was on October 28, 2009, at Concord Baptist Church. She loved horses and was taken in a beautiful antique horse-drawn carriage, like the princess she was, to the Hawthorne Memorial Gardens. Elizabeth's family thanked all of the volunteers who showed up to help, Peggy from Missouri Missing, and all of the law enforcement agencies that assisted in any way. The family said they truly appreciated them surrounding them with their love and compassion during such a difficult time. Alyssa's first court appearance was on November 17, 2009. The judge stated that she should be tried as an adult. There was a debate about whether she should be tried as an adult or not, since she was only 15. If she were tried as an adult, the death penalty would be on the table as a possibility. There are only 22 states that use a dual jurisdiction system, and Missouri is one of them. If the jury decides that Alyssa is guilty, she could be in prison until she turned 21, at which time she would get a new hearing. At the new hearing, they would see if she had been rehabilitated in prison or not. That brings up a whole conversation in itself. Does prison usually work, as far as rehabilitating prisoners, or does it not? In the end, Alyssa would be tried as an adult. Of course, her defense lawyer, Kurt Valentine, was not happy about the decision. He said, quote, "We are throwing away the child, and we are signing a death sentence for Alyssa. She is not going to survive her time in Cole County Jail." Alyssa had confessed, taken the police to Elizabeth's body, but she still pled not guilty. She was held without bond. While she was in jail, she began self-mutilating with her fingernails, so they had to clip them. She was under suicide watch. Alyssa's lawyer filed a motion that she be taken to a psychiatric facility so she could be examined and obtain the treatment that she needed. This was allowed. She was sent to Hawthorne Children's Psychiatric Hospital to be looked over. Eventually, the judge sent her to the Fulton State Hospital for another evaluation. According to caselaw.finelaw.com, it says, in November 2009, the Cole County Juvenile Officer filed a petition asking the juvenile court to relinquish its jurisdiction over Alyssa to allow the state to prosecute her as an adult in circuit court. The juvenile court held a certification hearing at which Alyssa was represented by counsel, and ultimately granted the juvenile officer's petition. The state then charged Alyssa as an adult with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. Attorneys Donald Catlett and Charles Moreland from the Capital Division of the Public Defender's Office entered an appearance on Alyssa's behalf. The trial was to originally start on May 16, 2011. She would be tried as an adult with first-degree murder. There were some issues that delayed the trial. Her attorney kept motioning to have the trial moved. The date was pushed up to January 30, 2012. She decided to plead guilty to second-degree murder and armed criminal action. When Alyssa confirmed that she took a knife to Elizabeth's throat and slit it, and after that she started to choke the child with her bare hands, everyone in the courtroom gasped out of disbelief, anger, shock, and utter sadness. Quote, "I strangled her and stabbed her in the chest," Alyssa said. When asked if she also cut Elizabeth Olsen's throat, she responded, yes. Her lawyer, Charlie Moreland, said Alyssa wanted to plead guilty because she wanted to take responsibility for it. The defense fought hard. They tried to say that the cause of this murder was her depression medication, Prozac, which she had been on for 2 years when she murdered Elizabeth. 2 weeks before she committed this horrendous act, the doctor had upped her dosage. A psychiatrist for the defense testified that Prozac could have made Alyssa moodier and more violent and contributed to the murder. This was denied by a psychiatrist testifying on the prosecution side. Her defense team told stories of the family's drug abuse, suicide attempts, and mental disorders. They said Alyssa was not in great mental condition because her mother left her and her father was in prison. The prosecution argued that she was not taking her Prozac at the time of the murder. Also, at one point, trying to get the point across, stating, quote, this was very premeditated by the 15-year-old murderer because she had dug the grave holes at least 5 days in advance of the murder. And it was premeditated in the sense that she sent her sister to get Elizabeth out of the house for the purpose of murdering her, end quote. The authorities had taken muddy jeans and clothes as evidence, and the prosecution also used these as evidence. The clothes seemed to have bloodstains on them. They also seized 2 shovels. The blood that was on the clothes turned out to be Alyssa's. Alyssa's attorney said, quote, no blood from Elizabeth was found on anything that was seized from that home, end quote. The defense had psychologists take the stand and said Alyssa was, quote, psychologically damaged and severely emotionally disturbed. They went on to testify that she suffers from major depression and has the symptoms of borderline personality disorder. She definitely did have a past with self-mutilation, with over 300 cuts on her body, self-inflicted cigarette burns, attempted suicide a number of times, and a history of depression. I don't think anyone questions that at all, and she did need more mental health care than she received. In February of 2011, Jerome Elam wrote an article about this that says, quote, as a survivor of both physical and sexual abuse, my youth was spent in an environment of poor parenting, and I have seen others in my circumstances part ways with humanity. So why do children who choose to be consumed by the darkness and abandon all hope on giving life meaning? The simple answer is that they have convinced themselves their own lives no longer have value, and by extrapolation, everyone else's as well. Anger is a motivating factor in juvenile violence, and when a powerless child sees those as having power over the musing violence, they assimilate. In cases of long-term abuse, anger can build inside a child until an explosion occurs. If you place a cork into the mouth of a faucet and turn the tap on full, eventually the water has to go somewhere. Such is the case in children who come from abusive households. Schooled in inappropriate ways of expressing negative feelings, many children are nurtured on dysfunction. They learn to seek out chaotic situations because it is what they are most comfortable with. End quote. The evidence that sealed Alyssa's fate was her diary. After she killed Elizabeth, she went straight to her diary to write about it flippantly. There were days of testimony before Alyssa sobbed in court for the first time in 2 years of these court hearings. The tears came when the prosecution started to drive their point home for a life sentence, and her grandparents got emotional and walked out of the courtroom when they heard the details of the murder being so passionately spoken about. When the judge said that he would be giving Alyssa her sentence on the next day, Elizabeth's grandmother screamed out, "I think Alyssa should get out of jail the same day Elizabeth gets out of the grave." Cole County Prosecutor Mark Richardson told the court, quote, "She committed the murder after deliberation, which means cool deliberation or cool reflection on the matter for any length of time," end quote. Christopher Ferguson is an associate professor at Texas A&M International University in Laredo. He found violence in the home, such as abuse and poor parenting, is the largest indicators of violent behaviors in children. The Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs released a study in 2009 called "From Time Out to Hard Time: Young Children in the Adult Criminal Justice System." Within its pages, it states that in 22 states, including the District of Columbia, children as young as 7 can be sentenced as adults. More than half the states allow children under 12 to be treated as adults. Beginning in 1985, violent crimes by children increased, and from 1995 to 2004, 92 murders were committed by children under 12. The study found a disturbing trend among violent offenders transferred to adult court. More often than not, only the high-profile cases were transferred, while others were placed on probation or even released. There were strong inconsistencies in how children under 12 were prosecuted under the law. Barry Dale Lucatus was 14 when he murdered his algebra teacher and 2 students. He dressed up like a Wild West gunslinger. Lucatus walked from his house to his 5th period class armed with a hunting rifle and 2 handguns. As he began shooting, he was heard saying, "This sure beats the hell out of algebra, doesn't it?" A quote from the Stephen King novel, Rage. Lucatus' parents divorced when his mother found his father was having an affair. She grew increasingly suicidal afterwards and would often speak of a joint suicide that included her son. Lucatus was being treated for clinical depression and suffered relentless bullying at school. At trial, his defense attorney pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity, citing messianic and delusional thoughts. The jury thought otherwise and sentenced him to 2 life sentences and an additional 205 years without the possibility of parole. The responsibility of being a parent must take precedence over any other priority in our lives. It is one job we must not fail to do our absolute best every single day of our lives until we can no longer walk this earth. The impact a parent can have on a child's life is immeasurable, and it begins the moment that the child takes its first breath of air. If we fail in our responsibilities as parents and act selfishly, the results of our actions are not hard to predict. An overwhelmed Division of Child and Family Services need the funding and resources to properly care for those children cast aside by those unable to parent. The life of a child is too valuable to waste, and we must do better as a society to ensure a stable environment for all children. If we turn our backs on the neglected and abused children of this world, the results present themselves on the front page of our morning paper. End quote. Alyssa's final statement was on February 8, 2012, right before she received her sentence. She said, I know words can never be enough, and they can never adequately describe how horribly I feel for all of this. If I could give my life to bring her back, I would. I just want to say that I'm sorry for what happened. I'm so sorry. Elizabeth's mother, Patty, called Alyssa an evil monster at the hearing and said she hated Alyssa. Afterwards, she was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole and was to be incarcerated for 30 years in a row. Some sources say 35. The prosecutor said in a statement, "These sentences are appropriate and fit what happened to Elizabeth at the hands of a truly evil individual who strangled and stabbed an innocent child simply for the thrill of it." In March of 2014, Alyssa appealed her sentencing, and it was denied. In October of 2015, Elizabeth's mom, Patty, sued Alyssa, the hospital that Alyssa was committed to, which was Pathways Behavioral Healthcare, and two employees in a wrongful death lawsuit. Patty believed that Alyssa committed the murder of her daughter while she was being treated by them, and the psychiatric hospital should have noticed that Alyssa had violent tendencies and that they should have taken precautions. The judge rejected the lawsuit, and Patty wound up settling for $5 million in 2017. Alyssa would have to pay that plus 9% interest per year until it's all paid off. Their agreement was that Patty would not collect less than $500, and Patty was entitled to collect any amounts in excess of $500. Alyssa would have to let Patty know in writing in advance if she accepts compensation, payments, or any other gift or form of property in return for her comments, participation, appearance, opinions, accounts, or any related media coverage, documentary, movie, book, television show, or series about Elizabeth's murder and Alyssa's arrest. Alyssa would have to tell her about court proceedings, her incarceration, appeals, or any future events. If Alyssa were to violate this agreement, the consent judgment that authorized it will become void. Alyssa is serving her time at the Chillicothe Correctional Center, a state prison for women in Chillicothe, Livingston County, Missouri. I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I also want to give a shout out to my patrons on patreon.com/reverietruecrime. Thank you so much, Joe, Casey, Shannon, James, Matt, Ian, Brandy, Chelsea, Maggie, Liz and Shayna, Kara, Emily and Melissa, Lorraine, Denise, and also thank you so much for joining That's Basically the 80s Podcast and Hills and Quads Podcast. Wherever you are, stay safe and take care of yourself. I love you all.